Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Rylan Wingerter. I am a practitioner. I will be your practitioner for today. I'm also leading the teens. If there's any here, we'll meet in the classroom after this prayer. I use they, them pronouns, and my ancestors hail from England, Ireland, Scotland, France, Cherokee Nation, Jamaica, Germany, Sweden. I will have that memorized at some point. As practitioners, our job is to know the truth for you. And we have many ways that we can offer that to you, including all the things on the slide here, as well as doing prayer work and just being present and knowing the truth here and now. So that's what we are going to do now. Please join me in an opening prayer. There is only one divine presence, one divine purpose, one divine love. That love, that joy, that light, that bright, shining, glorious oneness is here now. It is present in each of us, in our hearts, our minds, our souls, connecting us together, connecting us to that presence, connecting us to the world. Through our heart connection, we spread love and joy and peace. We spread it with every word, every thought, every action. And here in this moment, in this place, we are the embodiment of love, of light, of joy. We are the divine presence on earth. And we are open to new ideas, new thoughts, new paths, new ways of spreading that love and that joy, of feeling it ourselves, of seeing it in others, of seeing it in the world, and of being it here, now, and always. And I am so grateful for this connection, for this community, and for these wonderful words we experience. And I release this into the law, knowing it is so, and so it is.
Well, you know what today is, right? It's Father's Day, and I would really appreciate any of you who are fathers in the room, any of you who are stepfathers in the room, any of you who are father figures for someone else, would you please stand up so we can thank you for your love. Gosh, where to start? My heart's so full already with the music. So I was telling the earlier service that when Reverend Abigail found out that her house sold and that they needed to move this week, she called and said, "Can you speak for me?" And I said, "Of course." Yay that they sold their house. And yay that they bought a house. So the topic this month has been higher, deeper love. And today's topic is, what's love got to do with it? And it's perfect for me. Every single one of my friends said, "Oh, you'll nail that one." And so this morning I woke up, because I create my talks in the morning, and I'm like, will I? Where are you? Yeah, but what came through to me is just this wonderful awareness of how spiritual practice and spiritual path have shaped my life in such a way that love is how I lead in my life. And I know those of you also on the spiritual path are finding that as well. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that and about how love overcomes difficulties. And so I thought I'd start with a story, if you'd like. Yay. Yeah? It's one you might have heard me tell before, but it just it's just a perfect example of what I wanted to talk about. So this is from Jack Kornfield. One 14-year-old boy in a program had shot and killed an innocent teenager to prove himself to his gang. At the trial, the victim's mother sat impassively silent until the end, when the youth was convicted of the killing. After the verdict was announced, she stood up slowly and stared directly at him and stated, "I'm going to kill you." Then the youth was taken away to serve several years in the juvenile facility. After the first half year, the mother of the slain child went to visit his killer. He had been living on the streets before the killing, and she was the only visitor he'd had. For a time they talked, and when she left, she gave him some money for cigarettes. Then she started, step by step, to visit him more regularly, bringing food and small gifts. Near the end of his 3-year sentence, she asked him what he was doing when he got out. He was confused and very uncertain, so she offered to help set him up with a job at a friend's company. Then she inquired about where he would live, and since he had no family to return to, she offered him temporary use of the spare room in her house. For 8 months, he lived there, ate her food, and worked at the job. Then one evening, she called him into the living room to talk. She sat down opposite him and waited. And then she started. "Do you remember in the courtroom when I said I was going to kill you?" "I sure do," he replied. "I'll never forget that moment." "Well, I did," she went on. "I did not want the boy who could kill my son for no reason to remain alive on this earth. I wanted him to die. That's why I started to visit you and bring you things. That's why I got you the job and let you live here in my house. That's how I set about changing you. And that old boy, he's gone. So now I want to ask you, since my son is gone and that killer is gone, if you'll stay here. I've got room and I'd like to adopt you if you let me." And she became the mother of her son's killer, the mother he never had. That's a true story. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? It's not a one-off. Things like this happen every day. Because all over the world, stories of love transforming lives, healing, lifting, and changing outcomes are happening. It's just that often we don't hear about them. Or if we hear about them, we don't think about that it could be us. Because a lot of times it seems so extraordinary. Could we be that mother? I don't know. But I thought about a couple of the people that I've heard of that are doing this very thing in America right now. And I thought I'd remind you, and maybe you haven't heard of some of these folks. They are truly amazing, just like that woman. The first one I thought of, who's really transforming, healing, and changing outcomes for countless people, is a man named Father Greg Boyle. He's a Jesuit priest. and he lives in the LA area. And he's the founder of something called Homeboys Industries. Have you heard of them? And he was called out of this incredible love he had for Jesus when he began to see gang members and homeless children who were being sucked into drugs and alcohol, violence. He was called to find a solution. And his solution was to create this organization that takes kids off the streets and not only provides intervention so that they're not killed by their gangs, but also facilitates rehabilitation if they're addicted to things, and then puts them into a reentry program where they learn skills, create things that are sold to support the industry, Homeboys Industry, and eventually are found jobs and opportunities that they never would have seen had they stayed on the streets. So Father Greg has tons of YouTubes. He has a website. If you haven't heard of this guy, he really is truly amazing. And again, he's just allowing love to lead the way. The other person I thought about, maybe you've heard of her. Her name is Valerie Kaur, K-A-U-R. She is a Sikh. And during 9/11 times, her uncle, because they all wear turbans, was mistaken for a Muslim. He ran a gas station in Arizona, and someone shot him to death. She was younger. She was probably in her late teens, early 20s when that happened. And rather than hate, she and some of her family members went and talked to the killer in prison and just reached out in love to try to understand why that had happened and to explain who they are and what they stand for, which is love. And tremendous forgiveness was offered, which started her on a path that she now has an organization called Revolutionary Love. And the reason it's revolutionary is it is not confined to one group of people, but to everyone. So she's an amazing speaker and an amazing activist, but what I love about her activism is it doesn't make the other person wrong that she's trying to speak to and help understand a different perspective. Very powerful woman. And of course, my favorite, because I am myself a cook, is a man named Chef Jose Andres. Have you heard of him? World Central Kitchen. And if you haven't heard of that organization, he was a chef. He was born in Spain, became a naturalized American citizen, went to chef school, had his own restaurant, and when the hurricane hit Haiti, he realized that nobody was doing anything to organize to feed the people. And so he brought some of his chefs. They went to Haiti. They organized the local restaurant owners and their chefs, and they began to serve food on the street to people who had not had meals in days. And that started a whole organization where all around the world, Chef Jose organizes local chefs to provide meals for people when terrible things have happened. So you may remember when Maui was hit by this terrible fire that destroyed and it was just wiped out Lahaina. His chefs were there serving food. And you know, how many of you cook? How many of you love cooking? A few hands will go down, I know. But you know that when we feed people like our Gourmets for Good folks are doing, you know that we're not just serving food. We're serving love, right? And that's what that organization does. So I came across a quote that long ago kind of shifted my perspective, and I talked a little bit about it at the 9:30 service. It's a quote from Sri Nishragata, hard Indian name for me. But he was a revered saint in India, and this is what he said. The mind creates the abyss. The heart crosses it. And I think for me, this is the message today of what's love got to do with it. Because you know, if you've been on a spiritual path for any length of time, that there are abysses in our life. There are really difficult things that happen. Someone we love dies. We receive a diagnosis that is terrifying, and we have to go through the process of that. We have people that we love decide they don't love us anymore. We have children cut us off for no known reason. All kinds of things happen. And the abyss opens before our very feet. And depending on how we relate to that, allows us to move across that abyss or not. And the whole point of spiritual practice, walking a spiritual path, is when we get to the edge of that abyss and we feel like we're going to fall in, we remember we are not alone. There is something in us greater than any abyss. There is something in us that is so powerful that it created everything that is. There is something in us that is so much love that it cannot be stopped. It must move us forward. And that moment is what we train for. That's why we do spiritual practice. Because the abysses, you know, the mind creates them, right? That's what the Indian saint said. And you've probably had that very experience. I had a very small abyss moment when I indulged in abysmal thoughts long ago, and it was such a teaching for me. I was with a different husband, and I was a young mother. I had three little kids, and everything was going great. And it was a Saturday. We weren't working yet on Sunday. We were both ministers, and so this was the time of Blockbuster. Remember that? And what do you do with three little kids on a rainy day? You go to Blockbuster and you get a movie. So he said, I'll go get a movie. And I said, great, I'll clean the kitchen. So I'm cleaning the kitchen, you know, and I've got a broom and I'm sweeping. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, you know, I'm the only one that sweeps this kitchen. In fact, I don't think I've seen him sweep this kitchen ever since we've moved into this house. In fact, I think I'm probably the only one that does the laundry, too. That's just not right. And I'm sweeping harder and harder and harder, and I'm getting madder and madder and madder. And he comes back with the video. He's like, everything okay? No! Okay, what happened? Everything was fine when I left. Well, let me tell you a thing or two, you know. Fortunately, I caught myself right then. And I said, you know what? I just had an abysmal time here. The abyss opened before my very feet. But fortunately, before I drove him into the abyss with me, I stopped. And I stopped because I could hear that this is not how I want to be. This is not how I want to communicate. this is not loving. This is not kind. It might be true, but it's not kind to say it in the way I think I should say it. So I stopped. And what allowed me to stop way back then is I had already been on a spiritual path since I was 18. And I had enough personal awareness to hear my mind creating that very abyss. Wasn't there when he left, but boy, I created one. How about you? So spiritual practice is the ability to train ourselves to not only recognize when the mind is creating something that we really don't need to create, but also recognizes that there's something in us, call it what you will. In the recovery movement, it's called a higher power. For me, I call it spirit, but whatever you want to call it, it is bigger than the abyss. It knows how to carry us across those places with love, because that's what it is love. And so part of my training has been to allow that love to alert me, first of all, if I've created an abyss, to be in me, through me, and as me very deliberately in moments when things are very difficult, either in my life or someone else's life or in society. I can't tell you how many people have said to me, I don't understand how you can be so calm when so many really hard things are happening. Spiritual practice. I'm not doing this. I see it. And I so trust in love that I know that for me, the only path is to offer love. That anger, blame, guilting, shaming, all that. I don't know about you, but it's actually never worked for me. It was sort of satisfying, sort of, in a kind of kinky, yucky way, but it never actually healed the abyss. It stayed there. So for me, what's true about what's love got to do with it is it has everything to do with it. And the way that we can practice is to begin to pay attention to our mind and to notice when it starts going into loops that are not loving. Some of this, as I said in the earlier service, is so ancient that we might not even be aware that it's operating. It's kind of like a computer program running in the background that's screwing up the whole thing. Our ancestors, God loved them, were a lot more concerned with survival than you and me. If you haven't realized it yet, we actually live in a post-survival world. Most of us are not hungry. Most of us are not cold when it's freezing out. Most of us are not hot when it's hot out. Most of us have a means and a way to get around. But our ancestors, not so much. And so they developed ideas that helped them survive. And some of those ideas, you know, I come from a Celtic background. Most particularly, most of my people came from Ireland. And if you know the history of Ireland, you know that they were invaded, they were placed into slavery, they were starved, they were taxed to the point where they had no money, no food, nothing. They had to leave their homes, a huge diaspora, because they were not surviving. So my people developed a lot of strategies around that, a lot of ideas. Their mind created a lot of abysses. And the one that my particular lineage really, really embodied all the way to me and my brother was betrayal. The idea that you could be betrayed. What's yours? What did your ancestors decide about life and then pass along as a way of trying to help their children and their children's children survive? They were doing it out of love, but they were also passing on the abyss. The abysmal thinking that believes that somehow now those same things are true. So it could be lack. It could be racism. It could be prejudiced against certain people or classes. You know, I don't know what your people did. Mine manifested betrayal over and over and over and over. And every time they were betrayed, they developed a hatred for the people that they perceived betrayed them. So, of course, it happened to me. Programming, right? I mean, from the time I was little, I heard the betrayal stories all the way back. It was the family storytelling around Thanksgiving and other times we got gathered. And, you know, it was all portrayed as like this noble carrying on in the face of horror kind of thing. And so, of course, I manifested that. And by then, I had been on the spiritual path a long time, so I definitely felt betrayed. I won't lie. I did. But right as I was going into the abyss of that, I went, I need help. I remember exactly where I was. I was, my ministerial students were doing their final talks at the center that I was at. And we were all going to gather for a celebration at Starbucks afterward. And so they went on, and I had my own car. Got in the car. It's night. I'm in complete destroyed mode. And I knew I didn't want to go into the abyss of horror and blame and anger for the rest of my life and all that stuff. So I said, Spirit, help! And on the way to Starbucks, it was so vivid. I saw a dark sea. There were no lights in the sky, no moon. It was a dark sea and a dark sky. And I was in the water. And a voice came out of that dark sky and said, Swim, damn it! My God's kind of, you know, my dad was in the Navy, what can I say? You know. And I was like, swim, move. This is now your life. And from then on, it changed. I got to my students and they're like, everything okay? Like, everything is really okay. You guys did a great job. So, you know, we're not trained to rely on people very much. A lot of that comes from that ancestral programming. You can't trust people, so just your people are the ones you should call on. And then you get to America, and your people are in the old country, and there aren't very many of your people here. And so you don't have very many people to lean on. And so you just try to go forward with your own willpower. When all along, a profound love is available. So, I guess my point is, that love is permanently factory equipment for you. But it only operates when we allow it. And so spiritual practice is the opening of the heart to the love that already exists within, that has nothing but love in it and can move in the world just like that mother who killed her son, move in the world just like Father Boyle, move in the world just like Valerie Carr, move in the world just like you and me. So I'll do a prayer for us. And I'll encourage you to renew your spiritual practices if you've forgot. And if you don't have one, my goodness, this town is full of it. You can go do Tai Chi. You can do Qigong. You can do yoga. You can do meditation. You can do sound bathing. You can do so many things. You can pray with practitioners right here today. Take advantage. swim. Know with me as I know. Love is completely, wholly present. Present in you, present in me, present. Offering itself all the time. And now I make a vow, and I invite you to do the same in your very heart, to open to that love. Not the wimpy, Valentine-y kind of love, but the love that generated this entire planet, the love that created everything that is, and the love that is manifesting in you and me all the time. I make a vow to turn to that love. Whenever my mind begins to create an abyss, I turn to that love in tight spots and in beautiful places. I turn to that love to help me and guide me when I don't know what to do. And without fail, every time I turn, that love turns right back and is fully present in me and in you. And for this, I am so thankful. And so it is. Thank you, everyone.